Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, August 2nd, 2012. I just want to reiterate that there is a tremendous amount of misinformation, just an unbelievable amount. I've never seen anything like this regarding the concept of Planet X, Nibiru, whatever, all of the buzzwords that are floating around. A huge amount of misinformation. Like I said, over a million websites claiming that they have found Nibiru or whatever, and then people trying to contact me with false information, hoping that I would stumble into some kind of trap, or I don't know if it's intentional or whatever, trying to get me to announce things. But at any rate, I'll be talking a little bit about that. This week, India had a massive power outage across the entire country. And remember, I've been talking about this for quite some time. It sounds like they're starting to experiment a little bit in some of the other countries. And as I said, it would be a little bit too obvious if all of a sudden the United States power grid went down, but nobody else. So it sounds like this is a bit of conditioning. But this past week, about two-thirds of India, the power grid went down, and they blame it on overuse. The states within India using too much power. Looks like India is attempting to be a worldwide superpower in producing goods, and they're just, you know, they have an infrastructure that's, let's say it's struggling, let's put it that way. So the distribution of power for people to survive, you have 1.6 billion people there, and a full one-third of India's population does not even have electricity. So what a just an amazing disaster of a country. But I just want to take a diversion here. People in the United States think, how much worse can it get here? Well, go visit India, and you can see that we are nowhere near at the end of the rope, so to speak. Financially, the United States is being driven into the status of a third world country, and that's really where it's going. This facade that there's an economy or something's going on, about 50% of the people in the United States are unemployed. You can call jobs that people are working at, you can call them what you want, but they are basically literally unemployed. And you have the vast majority of aliens, a good 40 million of them, working for cash and taking services, on the other hand, not contributing anything. But the United States is fast moving to a status like India. But the few people that are working hold this illusion that somehow things are going to change, we're going to turn that economic corner and come back. It's just absurd. It's just absurd. But, yeah, we've got a very long ways to go before we get to a state like India. But from all intents and purposes, that's where we're headed. It's just going to take a while. India's a lot farther along the disaster, social and political disaster curve than the United States. I wanted to comment on the Batman movie, and I wanted to wait a little bit to kind of catch the fallout of this. It turns out that... just a second here. A listener wrote in and said that Canada had its own shooter about a week earlier over in Ontario. Said the same scenario, a dazed, kind of out of it person is shooting up, you know, in the public. But the same thing. The comment of the listener is that why not jump in a semi-truck and drive into a building or something? You'd hurt a lot more people. But obviously the point is to have guns involved, and then the emphasis on we got to get rid of guns. This is an international issue going on. Of course, they did this in Australia many years ago, the same type of routine, and then, everybody had to get rid of the guns. But just a comment, when I was a kid, I grew up in a small Midwestern town. All the kids had guns. I wouldn't say all, but lots of them. It wasn't unusual to go over to somebody's house and they would show you the guns they had or whatever, and nobody was worried about anybody running out and shooting anybody. Everybody was taught how to respect them, how to use them, how to always look to make sure they were unloaded, how to never point them at anybody, and nobody ever got hurt. Because as kids, we were taught to be responsible with them. But now, of course, the emphasis is on crazies. And, of course, to get these out of people's hands, the real reason, of course, is because the government fears the people. And as rightly they should. It's getting to the point where people, and I'm very surprised myself, not that I condone violence or anything else, but I'm very surprised that the people in government have gotten as far as they have without a few shootings of their own, of people just going ballistic on them. But like I say, not that I'm condoning anything, but I'm just surprised that it hasn't happened yet. The same listener says he wants to draw attention to a new television series that's coming out this fall. It's called Revolution. It says it focuses on a band of survivors making their way into a new world after all the world's energy mysteriously disappears. It says, doesn't this make you think right away about all the hype surrounding the power grid going down if a big solar flare were to hit the Earth, as NASA and the media has been pumping this to do? The whole issue being propaganda, and of course that's something I've been talking about for a long time, that a false flag event, the postings on my page, the commentary on my radio show, that the solar flare would be used as a false flag event. And if you want to look at these postings, you can go back, listen to my previous radio shows, look at the postings on Thought of the Day, which is a subpage on my webpage, jmccsci.com. But apparently this is the centerpiece of a new show where a band of survivors is, it says, making their way back into the world after all the world energy disappears. And the other comment I had is about my own comment about the Batman movie. I said that I did not have time to talk about the Batman movie on my show this past week, but I wanted to digest the propaganda. It did not have any of the typical Batman characters, like the Joker or Batboy, Robin. It had a new list of nutcases. The main villain was a nutcase male that had some kind of respirator on his mouth and talked like Darth Vader. His goal, to destroy government and free the people. When he is finally standing, and of course he's opposed to Batman, who's independent, and everybody seems to be opposed to Batman, but Batman is there saving the day. When this new villain is finally standing in front of Gotham City Courthouse screaming that the people should follow him and destroy the government, no one listens. They all go about their lives and all of the craziness that's going on in Gotham City. And, the police are the ones who save the day. There's some real subliminal messages in this movie, very strange subliminal messages. Yeah, the second villain is a woman. And she, through her philanthropy and influence on fooling Batman, gets control of the Batman fusion free energy device. And a lot of emphasis on free energy. So they're trying to put a very strange twist on the concept of free energy. And so the woman finally absconds with the Batman free energy device, and decides to make a bomb. Her goal is to destroy Gotham City. The entire end of the movie is over the police getting control of this, moving it out to sea, and then it blows up. By the way, Batman doesn't save much of anything in the movie. But all very strange, very subliminal messages, as I say, with the guy who's trying to free the people and get rid of government, and then the other person who's trying to use a free energy device to turn it on the people, the populace, and blow them all up. Very strange. It's a long movie. I wouldn't pay to go to it. I would if it weren't for going to see and make a comment on this show, I wouldn't have gone to it. But it's interesting how they're taking the whole Batman concept, which is kind of a fun and comic book type character, and turning him into something very different, and the whole show into something very different. It's almost 3 hours long. It's something I could just barely force myself to sit through. They should have paid me to go there, but at any rate, I wouldn't waste my time or money on that movie. The other comment of the listener was interesting, that from Canada they did not. There was no advertising. The big propaganda advertising for Batman simply wasn't there. And so he felt that they knew that this shooting episode was going to come along and give it all the advertising it needed. So I just thought that was an interesting comment, something to think about. At any rate, to make a long story short, this past week, and as happens many, many, many times with the disinformation crew trying to throw me off or trying to get me to do something strange or weird, someone called me, contacted me, I should say, and said, "Here's Planet X. I can tell you where it is," in claiming that the Hopis had something to do with this statement, stating that it was on Google Sky and you could see it clearly. So anyway, I followed the directions. Of course, something like this, I'm always skeptical. And you go to the constellation Leo in Google Sky, to the constellation Leo, and then click on infrared, and there's a big thing there, right off the front leg of Leo, the lion, in the constellation Leo, and in the infrared. And so anyway, there's this person claims is Planet X, and they've been watching it, and there it is. And so anyway, I'm trying to get me to announce this. Well, what they're looking at, it's a deep sky infrared. It's one of the brightest infrared objects in the sky known about. It is not Planet X. It's not Nibiru. It's called IRC plus 10296, or 10216, otherwise known as CW Leonis. And it's a bright infrared deep sky object in the constellation Leo. It is not, let me repeat, it is not Planet X. But you will find this kind of information spreading around the internet, people sending it around, and of course people trying to get me to repeat this on the air. But it's just another example of the amount of the number of curveballs coming at you on this topic of Planet X. So at any rate, the next topic I want to talk about is the power outage in India. This is a huge issue. I have just received information, some more information on this, and so I want to let you know that as I've said before, this was an issue that I've said was going on. A lot of people emailed in on this, saying that they had heard me stating that there would be false flag events regarding power outages. And then I said in my reports, I said, you can tell that this is a false flag event because it would only be occurring in the United States. Canada, Mexico, other countries would be just fine. And so how could it be just the U.S.? And so I guess they're trying to head that concept off at the pass by having an event in India. Now, for two-thirds of the entire country of India to go down because they say there's some overuse in one of the states is an absolutely absurd, ridiculous, preposterous proposal. So clearly, they're pulling the plug on the India power grid, probably in hopes of setting up the idea that, gee, we have these frail old power grid systems, and they're not able to handle the load. Well, let me explain what happens. If you take too much power off of a grid and not enough power is being generated, then you just get less electricity. The power sources don't magically generate more just because somebody is taking more. No, what happens is that the voltage drops, the amount of power drops in each sector, and that's what happens. You don't get free energy somehow onto the grid. So this idea that two-thirds of the country of India went down because some state in India was taking too much power is beyond absurd. That's not the way the power grids work. And, of course, one of the ploys is that, oh, gee, we have to build a new power grid system, a smart grid that'll take care of this. Well, let me explain something about the smart grid. The only purpose for a smart grid is to make sure they have a complete monitor on all of the electricity you're using, whether it's an appliance or or some other service in your house. They want everything wired. And then, of course, just like televisions, everybody had to run out and buy a new television when high def came in. Many people would have been just fine living out the rest of their days looking at a black and white TV. I'll tell you, I don't watch TV. It is so worthless. I have specific things I look at, but I don't sit down and turn on the TV and go to a channel and watch it. If I want to find out, for example, what National Geographic, what misinformation they are putting out or whatever, then the History Channel, whatever, I will go to something specific and watch it. But to just sit down and watch TV, I don't have time myself. And most people I know are pretty busy with their lives or with their families. But the smart grid, the only purpose for that is to keep track of everybody's use of electricity because it is intertwined with our lives anymore to the point where we have no choice. Your life depends on electricity. Very few people are living off the grid and off of utilities. So this power outage in India, to me, is a big indicator. It's a big indicator to get ready to live off the grid, to take care of yourself. And, of course, without water coming into the house, without facilities, without the ability to flush the toilet and then the sewer system, the electric pumps to move that off to the processing centers, just everything to pump gas, everything depends on electricity. And so I like the at the end of the articles that I saw in India, they try and blame it also on the monsoon. And India has had some severe weather, some monsoon weather that's moved in there, which they have every year. But let me reiterate, if there is overusage on the power grid, it's not a cause for the power grid to go down. You would lose voltage. You would have a lower voltage. Power will still move out on the grid, but it just won't be as much. And if any local sector that's producing electricity they can close off their grid and stop the flow of electricity moving into the next grid. So if one grid cell is taking up too much power, they can become isolated, and the controllers can turn that off. The grid also maintains itself automatically and with the use of diodes, so that if there's a surge, a diode is an electrical circuit component that allows circuit to pass in one direction, but if current tries to come back in the opposite direction, it blocks it. It's a very interesting electrical device. It has many uses, but on the power grid, it allows current to flow in one direction. And if power tries to come back, then it blocks it. But also in terms of overusage of power, if one element is using up too much power, or there's a short circuit of major proportions or something, then the adjacent power grids can easily detect that and shut that grid off, isolate it, and that's what would happen. Two-thirds of the country would not go down. Let's go back to the Northeastern power outage in the United States, when that was the result of, and I have this posted on my page, they had a little Tesla experiment. This was right after my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection. Right after that book came out, and identified the Tesla tower as extracting energy from the ionosphere, and how that worked, the Mill boys got together and had a little experiment up next to Ottawa. And they couldn't get the Tesla tower powered up. And the real purpose of a Tesla tower, as I pointed out in that book, was to collect energy. There's a lot of misinformation floating around the internet and in movies. The Sherlock Holmes movie has some things about Tesla in it, that he was going to distribute energy. I went to a seminar, and there was a guy talking, a specialist supposedly, that the Tesla tower was supposed to distribute energy. And I said, at the end of the talk, I asked the guy, I said, where was Tesla going to get the energy to distribute? He said, oh, they had batteries. They had batteries. Give me a break, dude. In 1905, they didn't have batteries enough to power a city. And where did the batteries get the power? I mean, these people are so stupid, so rock stupid, that they, you know, when asked a real question, I just looked at the guy. I couldn't even bring myself to respond because the answer was so incredibly stupid. I said, well, where do the batteries, where do they charge them up? Oh, well, they had them charged up. These people, the people that are, and these are like front people. These are people at seminars and stuff. They don't know anything, but they're trying to defend standard science. At any rate, the real purpose of Tesla's tower was to collect energy, from the ionosphere. Then it would be distributed out on the wire on the grid system. Getting back to the Northeast power outage, when the Mill boys did their little experiment up next to Ottawa, they did not have enough power to power up the Tesla tower. It takes a tremendous amount of power to power up the tower, and it's an oscillating frequency. It changes the... this is described in detail in my weather book, by the way, how the Tesla tower works, and finally drills an electrical hole, so to speak, through the dielectric atmosphere up to the ionosphere. And when it does, that electrical charge at the other side of the capacitor comes charging down, and at that point you have to have a method of controlling it, and also you have to have a place to put all that power. All that power has to go someplace and be used. Well, that day they didn't have enough power to quite get all the way up to the ionosphere, and so they borrowed a little bit from the United States. Canada opened the circuits to the United States, which allowed electrical current to flow up into Canada enough so they could power up the Tesla tower. And when that baby hit and drilled through and finally connected with the ionosphere, The energy that came down that tube and back down the Northeast Power Corridor from Ohio all the way down to the East Coast of Washington, D.C., there was enough power and current in that discharge to back up something like 9 nuclear reactors along the eastern coast of the United States. It was like a railroad train coming the other direction. That's what happens, and so all of those diodes, remember that if there's too much power coming in the wrong direction, the diodes should block that, but that was such a powerful surge that it completely blew out all the diodes, and all the way down to Washington, D.C., backed up 9 nuclear generators. The surge of the EMF surge was enough to knock cars out, to knock the starting mechanism out of many cars, radios, electronic devices. All kinds of electronic devices were fried, including toasters, etc. And so, at any rate, that is an example of the grid being overpowered from one direction, in the direction against the diodes. But the point is that with the India power outage, this is a major story, and it has to be interpreted correctly. Clearly, someone pulled the plug on India. And the reason they did that, so that would be all over the news, the Western news, and there's probably not many people out there that haven't heard about this, so that you would all hear, oh, there was a big power outage in India. By the way, there was a big power outage in the United States this past week, also up in the Northeast. Another major power act of God, they say. But they're claiming it's due to some storm activity, but more and more we're seeing the power grid getting pulled bigger and bigger sections of the country. And I'm telling you, folks, one of these days, that power grid ain't going to be there anymore for you. Then they're going to come around and with a false flag event say, okay, now we have to power up the new smart grid. We have to put a national effort, just like building the highway system. I bet you they even compare it to the federal highway system, that we have to do this for national defense and the security of everyone out there. Just think of Obama taking care of all the kids in the country with his efforts to save the children. So I just want to make this clear that keep just as clear as the writing is on the wall, this is going to happen, and it's the one way they have to pull the plug on this entire country, shut it down, and then bring it back the way they want it. By the way, I just in my notes here, I wanted, if there's any amateur astronomers out there or people that go to Google Sky, this infrared object that I was talking about in the constant Leo, which, by the way, as I said before, is not Planet X, I'll give you the coordinates for this. It's 9 hours, 47 minutes, 38 seconds. And the other coordinate is 13 degrees, 1 minute, 33 and a half seconds of arc. And so, at any rate, that will just, you can see that. If you go to Leo and click on infrared in Google Sky, just click on constellations and then go to Leo, you will see this big, bright, infrared object. And as I said, there's a lot of people running around claiming that this is Planet X, and be advised, it is not Planet X, or nor Nibiru, nor anything else. It's a known deep sky object. I want to make a quick comment. Every week I do a little financial segment. I want to keep this to a minimum. I talk about banking, the illegal structure of banking, and remember that banking in the old texts, in the Old Testament, was specifically outlawed compound interest, or anything other than extremely low interest, simple interest. In other words, if you have a $100 loan, you'd have a 3% interest that simply pays some overhead of the benefactor, the person that loaned the money, and that's it, 3%. So when the loan is paid back plus that little bit of interest, simple interest, then the loan is satisfied. Where would we be, the question this week, in banking or finance or economy 101 or whatever you want to call it, where would we be without compound interest? Well, first of all, we wouldn't have a national debt. We wouldn't have a war industry. Well, there would have been no bailout. You would probably own two homes. Your homes would cost $30,000. And once you've paid that off, after working, you would have all your money left over for living. Today, people are just barely able to pay their interest on their houses. This drives the price of the houses up to where they are today, hundreds of thousands, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars for the house that shouldn't be more than $30,000 or $35,000. Compound interest creates a very unstable economy, and when people start using credit or credit cards, compound interest creates tremendous damage to the economy. The people simply cannot pay it off. It raises the prices of things like insurance. Then you have the oil industry gouging, and the end result is the country cannot survive. It cannot survive economically, and it's not surviving. When you look around and you see, if you go out in your car, you see people driving up and down the street. They're probably the 30 to 40 million people who are gainfully employed in this country, working, paying interest, and still able to keep a house payment. But of course, the house value is way under what they're paying in house payments, so they're just a time bomb. They're an economic time bomb waiting to happen. They are not going to be able to ever pull out of that. The house values will never come back. But the question is, where would we be without compound interest? Not to mention the fact that this is just fiat money, it's worthless money in the first place, but the concept of compound interest, amortization, or mortgage, I've said this before, are words that come from the Latin mort, to kill. They're designed to kill you economically and probably physically. Nobody, no matter how rich they are out there, no matter how much money they have, and there's all kinds of blocks to keep people from getting outside of this system. Congress is passing all kinds of laws to block people from leaving the country, they're just locked into this system with insurance, with all of the other things that go with it. You can hardly exist today without being locked into the system. And of course, this is when they took over the ability to tax individuals. Of course, money is the root of all evil, and if you allow someone to illegally tax the individuals, that evil is going to permeate the lives of every person in the country, and of course, every person in the world as a result of it. So where would we be without compound interest? We would be a nation of people would be living in the houses they own. They would have a lot of extra money. We would not have a national debt. And life would be good. Life would be a lot better. You can see that the problems of the world are caused by greed of a few. The end result is you have to get rid of these people. These half people have to go. And they have a way of infiltrating, coming back in, because they don't have any other way of making money or making a livelihood. I shouldn't say that, because many people have a way of making a livelihood for their existence, but when somebody comes in and takes a piece of everything you do and starts taking a bigger piece and a bigger piece and a bigger piece, and then gets the government to get in the middle and take a bigger and bigger piece, or like insurance, require that you have it and then make you pay. There's only one end, and that is financial ruin. Most people have already fallen through the cracks and have no voice. When you go out and drive up and down the street, you don't see them. They don't have a voice. They're not there. They're not there screaming, "Hey, I've fallen. I'm out of the picture." But all you see are the people that are there. But like I say, they are just walking time bombs, walking economic time bombs. The following is an email sent in by a listener, and I'm going to read this. I'm sorry it's going to be a little bit lengthy, but I think it's worth every minute of this email. I'll start reading. This is from a listener, Mark. He's forwarded this. Okay, the author of this article lives in South Dakota and is very active in attempting to maintain our freedom. The name is Kitty Werthmann, Werthmann. He's 85 years old, and here is her story. Okay, in quotes, here's the Katie Werthmann story. She says, "What I'm about to tell you is something you've probably never heard or will ever read in the history books. I believe that I am an eyewitness to history. I cannot tell you that Hitler took Austria by tanks and guns." She's talking about Austria pre-World War II, Austria, in Hitler coming in. She's saying that Hitler did not take it by tanks and guns. She said it would distort history. We elected him by a landslide, 98% of the vote. I've never heard that in any American publications. Everyone thinks Hitler just rolled in with his tanks and took Austria by force. In 1938, Austria was in a deep depression. Remember, this is Kitty Werthmann talking. In 1938, Austria was in a deep depression. Nearly one-third of our workforce was unemployed. Gee, does that sound familiar? We had 25% inflation and 25% bank loan interest rates. Sounds like credit cards in the United States. They're at 25%, folks. Okay, so anyway, sorry, I won't interject any more into this. Okay, back to Kitty Werthmann's story. She says, "Farmers and business people were declaring bankruptcy daily. Young people were going from house to house begging for food. Not that they didn't want to work, there simply weren't any jobs. My mother was a Christian woman and believed in helping people in need. Every day we cooked a big kettle of soup and baked bread to feed those poor, hungry people, about 30 daily. The Communist Party and the National Socialist Party were fighting each other. Blocks and blocks of cities like Vienna, Linz, and Graz were destroyed. The people became desperate and petitioned the government to let them decide what kind of government they wanted. We looked to our neighbor to the north, Germany, where Hitler had been in power since 1933. We had been told that they didn't have unemployment or crime. They had a high standard of living. Nothing was ever said about persecution of any group. We were led to believe that everyone was happy. We wanted the same life in Austria. We were promised that a vote for Hitler would mean the end of unemployment and help for the family. Hitler also said that businesses would be assisted and farmers would get their farms back. 98% of the population voted to annex Austria to Germany and have Hitler for our ruler. We were overjoyed, and for 3 days we danced in the streets and had candlelight parties. The new government opened up a big field kitchens and everybody was fed. After the elections, German officials were appointed, and like a miracle, we suddenly had law and order. 3 or 4 weeks later, everybody was employed. The government made sure that a lot of work was created through the Public Works Service. Hitler decided we should have equal rights for women. Before this, it was a custom that married Austrian women did not work outside the home. An able-bodied husband would be looked down on if he couldn't support his family. Many women in the teaching profession were elated that they could retain the jobs they had previously had been required to give up for marriage. Hitler targets education, eliminates religious instruction for children. Is the next topic. Our education was nationalized. I attended a very good public school. The population was predominantly Catholic, so we had religion in our schools. The day we elected Hitler, March 13, 1938, I walked into my schoolroom to find the crucifix replaced by Hitler's picture hanging next to a Nazi flag. Our teacher, a very devout woman, stood up and told the class we wouldn't pray or have religion anymore Instead, we sang Deutschland, Deutschland über alles and had physical education. Sunday became National Youth Day with compulsory attendance. Parents were not pleased about the sudden change in curriculum. They were told that if they did not send us, they would receive a stiff letter of warning the first time. The second time, they would be fined the equivalent of $300. And the third time, they would be subject to jail. The first 2 hours consisted of political indoctrination. The rest of the day, we had sports. As time went along, we loved it. Oh, we had so much fun and got our sports equipment free. We would go home and gleefully tell our parents about the wonderful time we had. Just a second, I have to advance this. Okay, my mother was very unhappy. When the next term started, she took me out of public school and put me in the convent. I told her she couldn't do that, and she told me that someday, when I grew up, I would be very grateful for being put in the convent. There was a very good curriculum, but hardly any fun, no sports, and no political indoctrination. I hated it at first, but felt I could tolerate it. Every once in a while, on holidays, I went home. I would go back to my old friends and ask what was going on and what they were doing. Their loose lifestyle was very alarming to me. They lived without religion. By that time, unwed mothers were glorified for having a baby for Hitler. It seemed strange to me that our society changed so suddenly. As time went along, I realized that what a great deed my mother had done, that I wasn't exposed to that kind of a humanistic philosophy. Equal rights hits home. In 1939, the war started and a food bank was established. All food was rationed and could only be purchased using food stamps. At the same time, a full employment law was passed, which meant that if you didn't work, you didn't get a ration card, and if you didn't have a card, you starved to death. Women who stayed home to raise their families didn't have any marketable skills and often had to take jobs more suited for men. Soon after this, the draft was implemented. It was compulsory for young people, male and female, to give 1 year to the labor corps. During the day, the girls worked on the farms, and at night they returned to their barracks for military training just like the boys. They were trained to be anti-aircraft gunners and participated in signal corps. After the labor corps, they were not discharged but were used in the front lines. When I go back to Austria to visit my family and friends, most of these women were emotional cripples because they just were not equipped to handle the horrors of combat. 3 months after I turned 18, I was severely injured in an air raid attack. I nearly had a leg amputated, so I was spared having to go into the labor camps and into military service. Hitler restructured the family through daycare. When the mothers had to go out into the workforce, the government immediately established child care centers. You could take your children ages 4 weeks to school age and leave them there around the clock, 7 days a week, under the total care of the government. The state raised a whole generation of children. There were no motherly women to take care of the children, just people highly trained in child psychology. By this time, no one talked about equal rights. No one talked about equal rights that we knew we had had before. Healthcare and small business suffer under government controls. Before Hitler, we had very good medical care. Many American doctors trained at the University of Vienna. After Hitler, healthcare was socialized, free for everyone. Doctors were salaried by the government. The problem was, since it was free, the people were going to the doctors for everything. When the good doctor arrived at his office at 8 a.m., 40 people were already there waiting, and at the same time, the hospitals were full. If you needed elective surgery, you had to wait a year or two for your turn. There was no money for research as it was poured into socialized medicine. Research at the medical schools literally stopped, and the best doctors left Austria and emigrated to other countries. As for health care, our tax rates went up 80% of our income, up to 80% of our income. Newlyweds immediately received a $1,000 loan from the government to establish a household. We had big programs for families. All daycare and education were free, high schools were taken over by the government, and college tuition was subsidized. Everyone was entitled to free handouts, such as food stamps, clothing, and housing. We had another agency designed to monitor businesses. My brother-in-law owned a restaurant that had square tables. The government officials told me had to replace them with round tables because people might bump themselves on the corners. Then they said he had to have additional bathroom facilities. It was just a small dairy business with a snack bar. He couldn't meet all the demands. Soon he went out of business. Yet the government owned the large businesses and not many of the small ones existed. It could be in control. We had consumer protection. We were told how to shop and what to buy. Free enterprise was essentially abolished. We had a planned agency specially designed for farmers. The agents would go to the farms, count the livestock, then tell the farmers what to produce and how to produce it. In 1944, I was a student teacher in a small village in the Alps. The villagers were surrounded by mountain passes, which in the winter were closed off with snow, causing the people to be isolated. So people intermarried and offspring were sometimes retarded. When I arrived, I was told there were 15 mentally retarded adults, but they were all useful and did good manual work. I knew one named Vincent very well. He was a janitor of the school. One day I looked out the window and saw Vincent and others going into a van. I asked my superior where they were going. She said to an institution where the state health department would teach them a trade and to read and write. The families were required to sign papers with a little clause that they could not visit for 6 months. They were told visits would interfere with the program and might cause homesickness. As time passed, letters started to dribble back saying these people died a natural, merciful death. The villagers were not fooled. We suspected that what was happening. Those people left in excellent physical health and all died within 6 months. We call this euthanasia. The final steps, gun laws. Next came gun restriction and registration. People were getting injured by guns. Hitler said that the real way to catch criminals, and we still had a few, was by matching serial numbers on guns. Most citizens were law-abiding and dutifully marched to the police station to register their firearms. Not long afterwards, the police said that it was in the best interest of everyone to turn in their guns. The authorities already knew who had them, so it was futile not to comply voluntarily. No more freedom of speech. Anyone who said something against the government was taken away. We knew many people who were arrested, not only Jews, but also priests and ministers who spoke up. Totalitarianism didn't come quickly. It took 5 years from 1938 to 1943 to realize full dictatorship in Austria. Had it happened overnight, my countrymen would have fought to the last breath. Instead, we had creeping gradualism. Now our only weapons were broom handles. The whole idea sounds almost unbelievable that the state, little by little, eroded our freedom. After World War II, Russian troops occupied Austria. Women were raped, preteen to elderly. The press never wrote about this either. When the Soviets left in 1955, they took everything they could, dismantling whole factories in the process. They sawed down whole orchards of fruit, and what they couldn't destroy, they burned. We called it the burned earth. Most of the population barricaded themselves in their houses. Women hid in their cellars for 6 weeks as the troops mobilized. Those who couldn't paid the price. There is a monument in Vienna today dedicated to those women who were massacred by the Russians. This is an eyewitness account. Okay, so at any rate, that is a story, and I'm sorry that took a while, but I think it's something that everybody should listen to and take heed. Okay, finally I'm getting to the main science topic tonight. It's about thunderstorms, and this is an article. It first came out, I want to give the kind of the sequence of how this information came out. First of all, it was on, let me see, I'm just going to read this. It was first posted on a couple websites, and there's no other context to the report other than stated in the headline. So this is the headline that appeared on a couple of websites, and then you'll see the progression of where this ends up, and finally to find out that it was published in the magazine, the journal Science, but with no data. And I want to preempt this story by stating that the scientists who are now proposing that thunderstorms are affecting the ozone layer, which are in turn going to cause cancer in the public, there is no data to support any of this, yet it was published in Science magazine. It's been promoted by National Geographic. It's been posted on web pages. It's being passed around as true, but also this is being promoted by the same people who brought you the global climate change program, let's put it that way. Okay, so here it is. This is how it first appeared on a web page. Its title, Severe U.S. Thunderstorms Threatening Ozone Layer. A new study is warning, now this is, I'm reading from this web page. A new study is warning, this is not me talking, remember, this is a study on a web page. It says, a new study is warning intense summer thunderstorms are posing a major threat to the ozone layer. Scientists at Harvard University found strong thunderstorms are sending water deep into the stratosphere, setting off ozone-depleting reactions with chemicals that remain from now banned cooling gases known as chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs. The study warns that the ozone layer could suffer more damage should global warming unleash ongoing intense storms. And so you see the link that global warming is causing bigger, more intense thunderstorms. These thunderstorms somehow magically send water up through the stratosphere to the ozone layer at the top of the ionosphere and somehow affect the ozone layer, and that's going to cause cancer. Now, this series of, let's say, just standard science is absolutely absurd. Not only is it absurd, but they have no data. They've never taken any measurements. They admit that, but that's only in the fine print at the end. Then they talk about a fierce thunderstorm that rolled through the United States, knocking out power to more than 200,000 homes and businesses. Now, what does that have to do with an article that's talking about water shooting up out of clouds to destroy the ozone layer? I think you can see where this is going. It's everything, including the kitchen sink. And so here's my comment back to the listener that sent this initially in by email. I said, thanks. This is a huge piece of misinformation, but related to controlling man at all levels and the ending where weather is supposedly pulling down power to 200,000 homes. This is a seed article to plant the seed. First, there is no scientific review or peer review. It is stated as fact, pre-announced in a newspaper or government-controlled website so others can start repeating it to make it accepted fact. Thanks, and I will be talking about this on my show this week. That's the first email in this series of emails. Second of all, okay, here we go. This is the second email exchange. Now we find that, the next place this shows up is on Wikipedia. And then we find out that this is being circulated among scientists. Other scientists are saying, look, there's no data for this. Sounds like an idea that should be possibly explored. But they don't have any data that would tell us if this is true or not. Okay, next we find that National Geographic has picked this up. And I've always told you that National Geographic, in terms of science, is one of the biggest mouthpieces out there for standard science, for standard space science, or this type of global warming, that type of what I call fairy tale science. So all of a sudden now it has made its way to National Geographic, and then ultimately we find that the original article was published in the journal Science. And, of course, that is the U.S. equivalent of the journal Nature that is in the U.K. But it's this article, or this journal paper, the original article, we find out after the fact, was published in the journal Science, but with no data taken. There is no supportive evidence for any of this. So once again, you see the relation. The person who was one of the biggest promoters of global climate change due to greenhouse gases, which is a mythology, mythological science all on its own, now is claiming that that causes bigger thunderstorms, which causes water to shoot up into the stratosphere somehow magically. But remember, they've never measured any of this, to deplete the ozone layer, which will cause cancer. So this is cause for them to get more money, more funding to do their research. Oh, this is incredible. These are incredible movements, but there again, what you see is control due to global warming, or global climate change. There is also no theoretical structure for saying how these thunderstorms magically shoot the water and chemicals, which they have not measured either, up into the stratosphere. I mean, this is just fairy tale science at its best. Some guy sitting in his office at Harvard spinning tails. That's all you can say. But the end effect is politically controlling on the world population. Remember to visit my website, jmccsci.com. Remember, the new calendar is out there. The new calendar device, which allows you to create a calendar and a clock. If there's an emergency of some kind, it allows you to go outside either with the sun or with the stars, create a calendar, determine what the date is, and then create a calendar. And then even if there's a pole shift, it allows you to restructure and rebuild the new calendar. So this is an amazing device. It's only $39.95. plus $5 shipping, or you can, if you buy two of them, you get free shipping, or if you buy $200 worth of any other combination of products, you get one for free. So I just want to remind you, make sure you go to the website, jmccsci.com, and make sure you get your, it's called the Emergency Survival Calendar Portable Sun Star Clock, and that's exactly what it is, a unique device only available on my webpage. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.